Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Tuesday, July 9th, 2024. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's choosing to join us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the two words that say Start Here in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of the book contains a narrative description and explanation of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 19 years now to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click the link, download it, print it off, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it over and over again absolutely free. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one where people have been stepped through that worksheet process. And if you choose to listen to those even repeatedly, they can serve as a tutorial for you to help you get maximum benefit from these tools in the shortest time possible. You can also go to your app store if you so desire, type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And if you do that before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet. It contains an abbreviated version of that worksheet process. And it contains a copy of the Dragon-Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We hope people do all of that soon and often, primarily because it tends to improve the quality of people's lives the more they actively apply these tools in their lives, and secondarily because it tends to prompt comments, questions, answers, and testimonials. If you have any of those to share with us, please do so by giving us a call at 563-999-3581. Once you call that number, if you press 1 on your phone, it will put the little icon of a hand by your phone number. I'll be able to turn on the microphone and announce you by your area code, and we can have a conversation. If you're unavailable to call directly or you prefer not to, you can send me an email at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org, or you can email Jeannie at jeannie@whyagain.org. That's whyagain.org. And if we get a comment or a question from you, we will address it on the internet show, and then as time allows, send you a notification about what day and time that occurred, so you can listen back to the archives for your feedback or input. And we greatly appreciate whenever anybody concedes to do that, because it makes it so much easier for us to live into our intention with this work. The intention we have with this work is to be of service, and that is infinitely easier to do when we get feedback from you about how these things are landing. So please let us know. What can we do to be of greater service? And if we find out that from you, we take direct and clear steps to try and make that happen. Whether that is processing worksheets on the internet show or continuing our work with the readings that we've done, some of them just pure reading and some reading with commentary to try and expand the relevance that we see, that we experience as we're doing this kind of work. It is one of the quotes I like to use most often is from Guy Finley, who says that there is nothing more practical than true spirituality. And if I'm when I'm having my good days, that's what I'm doing in my own personal work and in my efforts to help others, is to just come back over and over again to the thoughts of what is most practical here, what is going to help most as we move forward. There's that bias was established very early in my career with the work as a probation officer. And these were people that had serious problems that needed practical solutions. And it wasn't of any value to talk to people about Newtonian physics versus quantum physics. It wasn't of any value really to quote philosophers. The people that I was dealing with, both as a probation officer and then later in my next job as adult jailing facility for male nonviolent offenders, and then as a juvenile hall employee in a secure juvenile hall facility, these were people whose families had just about every level of trauma that you can think of, short of being living in an actual war zone. These are people that had problems with physical abuse, sexual abuse, drug and alcohol abuse, repeated run-ins with the police and the court system, chronic pain syndromes. Gang affiliation. And so my, you know, one of the sayings that I grew up with was, necessity is the mother of invention. And by necessity, I learned to only start studying and then applying things that had practical application for the improvement of people's lives. And that has stayed with me throughout my entire work career and the pursuit of a doctorate in clinical psychology. Even though there have been people that I've gone to school with who are much more focused on long, in-depth discussions about the philosophy and the theology and the theoretical aspects of things, I've always drifted toward those endeavors, which help me refine practical tools that people can apply in their life to make their lives better. And it doesn't really, you know, it isn't tied to what's the latest fad and what's the culture saying. And it's been just very, very focused for me to try and help people get the best, most practical solutions under their belts. And that's what I'm still doing. That's why I work as much as I do with books like The Way of Mastery. It's still about what can actually help people improve their life quality. I was having a conversation with somebody in my office just in the session right before this show began that has that same focus. The idea is, okay, so this is what so-and-so thinks and what so-and-so thinks, and this is what, you know, my religious upbringing would say, and this is what the culture would say, and we would put all of that aside and say, okay, but what's the actual impact on your life? Is this helping to make your life more manageable or less manageable? And let's just stick to doing the things that have the greatest chance of helping you be in a place where you prefer the way your life is going. And one of the primary things that came out of that discussion is this idea about being in direct observation, helping people day in and day out learn to get better and better at living in observation rather than living from dogma or belief or shoulds. Someone should do this or that, because that bias, the bias that develops when I'm trying to live my life the way somebody else thinks I should, is a blind spot. Dr. Rice, in some of his work, talks about bias. I haven't heard him talk about this for probably 10 or 15 years, but he used to have a talk where he would talk about bias. And bias, if I remember correctly, one of his definitions for it was, it's an energy that I'm not aware of in my system that becomes activated. And whenever it's the strongest energy in my system that's activated that I'm not aware of, that particular energy drives my behavior. And one of the examples he gives is the story of the surgeon who is out driving with his son, and they have a horrible car accident, and the surgeon is killed, and the son is in critical condition, and they take the son to the hospital, and the surgeon on call is called in and is cleaning up, and they go into the operating room, and here's this young man laid out on the table, and all of a sudden the surgeon pulls back in horror and says, I can't operate on this boy, he's my son. How could that be? I thought you said the surgeon's son was in the car with the surgeon and the surgeon was killed. And, you know, that story has been told even in medical schools where there are women studying to be doctors in the audience and they can't come up with the answer. And, of course, the obvious answer is the surgeon who's walking in to the surgery is the mother of the boy on the table. But the bias that says, you know, the vast majority of surgeons are men activates in these people's minds, even women who are studying to be doctors themselves, had that bias activated in their mind, and it blocked them from being able to see the simple solution to this riddle. And so how can we, you know, make some progress in an area like that? How can we make progress in an area related to our bias? With this thing, being better at observation and learning to live more in the active state of observation. That's the, by far and away, the best way I know to improve in this area. Years ago, I would give this out more often than now, but there's an exercise that I would give out to people when they were new, especially if they had a history of abuse in their past. And the exercise is called the Safety Rating and Observations List. And the safety rating scale says, just take a breath, scan your body, and throw a number on how safe you feel. And because it's called the safety rating scale, the higher the number, the more safe you feel. And we'd ask people to do that, and they'd throw a number on it, like 5, 6, 8, 9, whatever. If they're sitting in a session with me, often they'll have a very high number on it. And I say, okay, that's fine. Now, this exercise requests that you do that a minimum of 20 times a day. And, you know, people say, what do you mean? That's crazy. I say, no, it just takes a moment. Wherever you are all throughout the day, take a breath, scan your body, and throw a number on how safe you feel. 10 is the most safe, comfortable, happy you've ever felt. And 1 would be life-threatening. And if you do that, what happens is you start to train your conscious logical mind to stay tuned in to the early warning areas, the energy fields, the gut, you know, the intuitions, the hair on the back of your neck, these energies, these warning signs, these nudges, these intuitions. And so it's reestablishing what we were born with. We were all very, very aware of our bodies and our body's energy system when we were young, and we've gotten conditioned out of it. So the first thing that happens is we reestablish that conscious connection between our thinking mind and our intuition level, the gut, the physical energy, emotional energy system level. And so then if I start doing that a minimum of 20 times a day, every day for 2, 3, 4 weeks, at the end of 3 or 4 weeks, I'll have done 2 really important things. One of them is I will have dramatically increased my awareness and my ability to stay tuned into this warning system, the early warning system. And the second thing is, I'll have a roadmap in my life of the people and the places and the circumstances in which I feel safe and in which I don't feel so safe. And if I just stop and think about that for a minute. That's a really useful thing to have. It's this roadmap of the places and situations in my life that I feel safe. Not that I'll instantly run away from or avoid every place where I don't feel safe, but I'll have more awareness going into those situations. Just as an example. And or I'll have a better ability to debrief after a situation like that where I've had some level of upset. And if I stick with that safety rating, and I decide to make it a habit of to stay tuned into, this is like in the way of mastery with the keys to the kingdom, one of them is intention. So I keep the intention going throughout the day to stay tuned into these early warning signs. And that can become my default. I can restore myself kind of to factory settings, because we were all born very aware of how we carry ourselves and what our energies are and what our early warning systems are. And we've been conditioned out of that, right? And that's, most of us have been teased by people in school if we fall asleep, or we're reprimanded by the teacher to make sure that we stay awake and alert in class, or we're told that we are not able to go use the bathroom when our body tells us that that's an important thing to do right now. And so we're conditioned out of that natural awareness that we had when we were infants and toddlers. So if we practice it long enough, we can actually reestablish that, you know, second nature, first nature awareness, and then we're living more in our day-to-day lives, aware, observing, tuned into what's going on in our energy system, in our bodies. And it's a very useful thing to have reestablished for ourselves. Once that happens, and we can identify these little nudges, these little twitches, these little, there's a tension in my throat, there's a little tension in my shoulder, or there's a tightness in my abdomen, then I can really step into a level of awake living. This is what a lot of people these days might call mindfulness, right? I can be living in the moment, and I can be aware of some of these more subtle energy experiences, and I can turn my awareness and focus in, and I can say, hey, wait a minute, maybe there's a bias active here. Maybe I'm blinded to seeing the whole picture in this moment because of a prejudice or a bias that has been active for sometimes decades that I'm unaware of. And I won't see it right away, but I can see, feel the tension that indicates that it might be active, and I can turn the focus inside and start questioning and learn to live more in the question in the moment. And I have found over and over again in my life that this is highly beneficial. Living in the moment, living in the question, whether you want to call it mindfulness or you want to call it living from observation, doesn't matter to me. And that's one of the most practical things I have ever found that I can do, or I've ever seen anybody do, to begin to improve the quality of their lives. And it's all part of what I find when I read things like the Tao Te Ching, or, you know, I listen to the audio book of Alan Cohen's The Tao Made Easy. Or for that matter, I listen to the audio book of Alan Cohen's The Course in Miracles Made Easy. It was a very, very similar set of messages. And the object is to stay in awareness, to stay in observation, to identify the dogmas and the stuck points and the tensions and the judgments, and just call them into question. You know, I just had the thought of when I'm in chemistry class in high school, and what's the universal solvent? Water. You know, water is like the most natural of solvents. Now, there are things that it won't act as a solvent for instantly. It's a tremendous solvent for things like salt and sugar and some other things. But it doesn't instantly dissolve a rock. And yet, water, as one of the softest things around, over time even wears down rock. It wears away metal, etc. So what's the solvent for us in our lives to dissolve our problems? Observation, questioning. It's like the universal solvent. There really isn't any problem that we face that can't benefit from another angle of questioning, another round of softening and asking to be shown. Now, you know, it isn't what we're taught to do for the most part in our schools and our families and our cultures. But, you know, like the old Kodachrome song says, when I think back on all the stuff I learned in high school, it's a wonder I can think at all. So it's a good thing, you know, to be thinking outside the box, to question all of the things that we've been told to not question, to just accept on faith, etc. So, once again, with a quick reminder that there is no time where it's not a good time to raise a hand and ask a question. And the number, the call-in number is 563-999-3581. Press 1 on your phone, and it'll let me know that you have a question. I'm going to go back to reading a little bit from Alan Cohn's most recent book, Of Course in Miracles. And one of the themes that came up in an Abraham talk, this is one of the more powerful talks I've heard, was the talk, the theme of following the path of least resistance. And following the path of least resistance doesn't mean always just doing the easiest thing. So see if holding the idea of following the path of least resistance, you can understand why I would read this from the second chapter of Alan Cohen's newest book, Of Course in Miracles. Alan writes, "Just out of college, I volunteered to teach yoga in a veterans hospital. I had no idea what I was getting into. There I found all the patients in wheelchairs, many with speech and motor impairments. Some were amputees. Their diapers smelled. Some just sat outside their room in the hallway all day long with no visitors. The facility was understaffed and overworked. Doctors and nurses were deflated and irritable. I'd never seen such suffering. I felt like Prince Siddhartha, who had grown up in a royal palace sheltered from the ills that plagued humanity. When Siddhartha ventured out beyond the palace wall, he encountered sick, old, and dying people. The stunning wake-up call moved him to try to understand how to escape the suffering of the world. Eventually, he became the Buddha. Alan writes, I was so distraught by my experience that the third week I was supposed to teach, I literally forgot to go. At that point, I realized that if I was going to keep teaching at the hospital, I would have to find a way, some way, to be with ease with these people and not get depressed. I decided I would go back to the facility and focus not on the patients' bodies, but instead relate to their souls. I would not see them as broken and decrepit, but instead I would see them as whole and empowered. Rather than fretting about their ills, I would find a way to have fun with them. During the next class, I guided the patients in a visualization in which I asked them to see themselves as 19-year-olds running on the beach. A voice in my head was chiding me, saying, "This is really cruel." But another voice in my head said, "Just do as Spirit has instructed you." Well, the patients loved the class and the visualization. Many radiated bright smiles, tears of joy running down their cheeks as they surpassed their body's physical barriers and once again felt strong, healthy, and free. The patients thanked me profusely for the gift of this experience, and the following week, they brought their friends. Eventually, that class became the most popular in the hospital. Patients were lined up in their wheelchairs far down the hall, waiting to get in. The image reminded me of the final scene in the movie Field of Dreams, where thousands of cars were lined up to visit the baseball field, where the physical world made a bridge to the spiritual world. And then he quotes here in his book from The Course in Miracles in the text, he quotes, "How lovely is the world whose purpose is forgiveness of God's Son. How free from fear, how filled with blessing and with happiness." Alan writes, "The ego and Christ look upon two entirely different worlds. The ego sees bodies while Christ sees spirit. And in Christ's vision, he would show you the perfect purity that is forever within God's Son." And that's from the text, of Course in Miracles. So transformed by such holy sight, a world of despair turns to one of hope. The Course in Miracles guides us to bring healing miracles to a suffering world, to deliver kindness that releases us from the shackles of fear and judgment. Grace brings and begins with higher vision and leads to a compassionate action. God offers only mercy. Your words should reflect only mercy, because that is what you have received and that is what you should give. That's from the text of Course in Miracles. Alan writes, "Jesus underscores that A Course in Miracles works in everyday life." Here's another quote. Quote, "This is not a course in the play of ideas, but in their practical application." Close quotes. It's again from the text, chapter 11. Alan writes, "He does not shy away from earthly events that make the world seem scary. Jesus calls us to look directly at frightening situations so we can see through and past them. In the workbook lesson 14, Jesus cites the examples of war, cancer, heart attacks, and airplane crashes. These are the thoughts that tend to make us cringe. Jesus mentions them so we can release them by recognizing that, quote, God did not create a meaningless world, close quotes. That's from the workbook, chapter 14. Alan writes, "He is using the events of the ego's world to lead us beyond that world to the real world." Alan writes, "In graduate school, I served as assistant to the dean of students. My first assignment was to respond to companies requesting recommendations for graduates who had applied for jobs. In most cases, this was an easy task, as the students had done well in their studies, and I could recommend them with confidence. Then I received a request from a student who'd done quite poorly in college. He'd gotten bad grades, flunked out, and then returned, and his record showed that he was antisocial, he'd gotten into fights, and he'd been placed on probation. He barely made it through college to graduate. In my opinion, he did not at all deserve a good recommendation. When I showed my proposed rejection response to Dean Blanton, he paged through the student's file and smiled softly. Dean said, "Let's just write him a recommendation. We'll give the guy a chance." So, as I redrafted my response, I realized that I had been given a teaching that far surpassed my psychology class. Dean Blanton forgave the student his errors and replaced condemnation with her mercy. He wanted to help the student more than penalize the student. He wanted to be a vehicle for the student to experience a miracle. To this day, many years later, that interaction stands as one of the most important memories of my education. Our daily activities offer a wealth of invitations for spiritual awakening. It's tempting to want to retreat from the world. I often fantasize about going off to a nature retreat, a cave, or a monastery, and escaping the insanity that we call life. While getting away for a while can serve a purpose, in the bigger picture, we're called to master life from within life. Learning to maintain inner peace in a war zone is a far greater achievement than staying peaceful amidst quiet conditions. My friend Karen was living in Los Angeles when the race riots broke out. Her section of town was seized with violence and looting. On the phone, I asked her, "How are you doing?" She replied, "I am established in peace." Karen refused to be seduced by an apparent breach of well-being. Her consciousness of the presence of love was her contribution to that awful situation. It was easy to hold the light. It is easy to hold the light amidst the light. But a light that shines in the midst of darkness goes much farther. While Jesus taught the highest metaphysics, he also was extremely grounded. He took care of people in bodies on the earth. When Jesus learned that John the Baptist had been killed, he set off to a remote retreat to pray and meditate. However, a large group of people, who we are told was 5,000, followed him. So much for his quiet time alone. After 3 days, he grew concerned that the people had no food. He asked his disciples to gather what food they could, which amounted to 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish. So the master took these items and prayed over them, giving thanks to the Creator, and then he asked the disciples to distribute the food to the masses. Well, miraculously, the loaves and fish were multiplied so that everyone was fed, and there was even food left over. He quotes the workbook of Course in Miracles to say, "Love is the way I walk in gratitude." That's from the workbook 195. Alan writes, "This miracle inspires us to take good care of ourselves and each other in the material plane. Jesus didn't tell the masses, quote, 'It's all an illusion, forget about your body,' close quotes. He had compassion for their physical hunger and he satisfied it. It's easy to talk spirituality. It's harder to live it. Compassion guides us to meet people where they live and relieve their suffering in the way that is most meaningful to them. We must show ourselves the same kindness. Anything we can do to minimize anxiety and stress constitutes a miracle. The Course tells us each day should be devoted to miracles." That's from the text in the first chapter. "I know of a man who suffered from deep depression. After he eventually worked his way out of the funk, he recalled that the person who helped him the most during that dark time was a friend who came to his house every afternoon and massaged his feet for 15 minutes. They exchanged hardly a word. The man says, quote, "Today I am redeemed." This is a quote from the Course in Miracles in the workbook 306. He says, it says, "Today I am redeemed and born anew into a world of mercy and care and loving kindness and the peace of God." So it seems as though we had a call and they just hung up. My knowledge of the way these things work is that that was a Skype call. It was all ones. And I was just about to turn on your microphone, so if you're still listening and you want to try that Skype call again, please call back. I'll be happy to turn on your microphone and see how we might assist you or communicate. In this work, Alan Cohen goes on and says, "Life on the planet can be difficult, yet we can make it easier by offering kindness." Voltaire stated, "Life is a desert, but we can transform our corner into a garden." The Course in Miracles shows us how to cultivate this garden. While the Course appears to be intellectual, it is far more experiential. It's a hands-on program, just like the Way of Mastery is a hands-on program, with these exercises that they suggest that we explore what is it that we really value. What is it we're doing with our thought energy, our mind energy, to value certain thoughts over others? That's the actual dynamic creating our experience of life. The Course is a hands-on program. If you try to process it through the thinking mind, you won't get very far. Even while the Course's world, the words engage the intellect, the Course's energy speaks to your soul. In the movie Pleasantville, everyone lives in a dull, drab, black-and-white world. And then he quotes the Course in Miracles, "The world is nothing in itself," close quotes. And then a few people in the movie find their passion for life. They begin to glow with vibrant color, like radiant flowers. The little acts of everyday life bring color to a lackluster existence. When you ask your neighbor how her son is doing in school, or you thank the postal desk clerk for taping your package more securely, or you wait patiently for the stray dog to cross the street, you are brightening the world and bringing it closer to heaven. Quote, "And they will hear the bird begin to sing and see the stream begin to flow again, with hope reborn and energy restored to walk with lightened steps along the road that suddenly seems easy as they go." Close quotes. That's from the workbook 109. He says, "I once had to reschedule a massage appointment. When I later told the massage therapist I had to reschedule again, I felt guilty. Not a problem, he told me. If you need to reschedule again, just let me know." In that moment, the therapist was living A Course in Miracles. He was teaching me that my perceived sin had no effect on him. Here's a quote from the text. "What has no effect does not exist, and the Holy Spirit, and to the Holy Spirit, the effects of error are non-existent." Close quotes. That's from the text, chapter 9. Alan writes, "I sometimes hear people say, 'It is what it is.' They speak these words in this way, in the wake of disappointing events, such as when a business deal falls through or participants don't show up for a program. In a way, it is so. The world is what it is. Yet heaven, which occupies a dimension far beyond the disappointing world, also is what it is. It is to this divine what is that A Course in Miracles would point us. Miracles create an overlap where heaven kisses earth, where the hand of the Creator reaches through a portal and transforms the mundane to become the divine. Ellen writes, I continued to teach yoga in that veterans hospital for 7 years until I moved away from the area. During that time, I developed some of the most meaningful relationships of my life with people that society wanted nothing to do with. But those people had an inner light that shined like beacons in the night. What started out as one of the most difficult experiences of my life turned out to be one of the most rewarding. Like the stunned but determined Prince Siddhartha, I found a way to rise beyond the suffering world and claim a more heavenly existence. I had no idea what I was getting into. So the reason I chose to read that is because of this theme of observing, being accurate in your observation rather than questioning, rather than running away from things, living practically in the moment, and finding a way to take the path of least resistance. Now, some would say that the path of least resistance would have been turn around, leave that job, don't go back there. These people have no mobility, they can't really do yoga, they've got dirty diapers, they can't care for themselves. But the true path of least resistance was for him to go into that situation and choose to focus on the good that was there rather than focus on what he could label as less than or bad or unpleasant. And that's really a fundamental choice each of us have in every day. Yesterday was one of those days where, with one exception, every person that I spoke to as a client, as a patient in my private practice, everyone except for one was having a very challenging day. And I mean everything from cars breaking down and being stranded to grandchildren being abducted to serious physical problems. I mean, it was a deluge yesterday in my caseload of people who were facing the worst stuff all day long. And keeping with the theme I started out talking about today, the idea of being practical, it wouldn't be practical for me to simply tell these people it's all going to be fine, or this is going to lead to some of the best, most important lessons in your life. Or it wouldn't be practical for me to just say, oh, this is no real issue, this is no problem, because there are real problems. There are things that need their attention in order to get resolved. And at the same time, depending upon their level of exposure to philosophical thought or their belief in a religious pattern or some kind of a higher power or creator, it might be useful for me, and it was for a couple of them, to be reminded that, you know, change is the only thing that's absolutely certain in this life of ours. So this too shall pass. It's a very difficult situation, and there's a lot that is on your plate right now, and there's a lot of challenging questions you have to answer. And yet, do what you can to breathe and soften and choose certainty over panic. Choose love over fear, because this won't last. And as a practical a- an actual tool. That's an actual tool. Every bit as much as learning to breathe in a certain pattern that helps relax the body. The EFT tapping, if you like that. Learning to identify a goal and cancel it. Learning to shift the focus of your attention away from the things that you do not have any control over, over to what few things in a situation you might have some control over. I had somebody yesterday who brought, you know, a very direct questioning to, you know, but if I don't do something about this, when I see these things and I know they're wrong, and I feel like I'm just, you know, copping out if I don't take action, or if I don't get angry, or if I don't start trying to mobilize people to be angry with me about this. And, you know, again, one of the more practical observations that I make with people is the observation about, if you interview a trial attorney and you ask her, what state of mind do you want the witness for the opposing side to be in when you're cross-examining that person on the witness stand? And ask them, do you want them to feel calm and safe and secure and relaxed? And I believe what you'll find is that that trial attorney will tell you no, she wants them to be in either hostility or fear, angry or sad or scared. And then you can ask them why. Why do you want that? And they'll tell you, because that's when people make mistakes. Well, I, as I said before, if you want to, you can try to convince yourself that that's just a special case that only happens to human beings when they're in a courtroom and they're on the witness stand and they're being cross-examined by the opposing attorney. If you want, you can pretend that. However, I don't think that's very realistic. I think that's just the way we as human beings are. I think that's the way we work. And if that's the case, then one of the most important things I can do whenever I recognize that I'm feeling any kind of hostility or fear, tightness or tension, resistance, etc., is shift out of that negative emotional state to get myself calm, to get myself in that open questioning, wide open space. And the sooner I do that, the better for my own outcome. So when I was talking to this person yesterday and he said, but when I see something and I just feel like I'd be copping out if I didn't get angry, then we began talking about, okay, so what does your anger do for the quality of your perception and your judgment? Historically speaking, most people understand that most of the things that they've done that they later regret doing, they did them when they were in a state of contraction or fear or anger or hurt or sadness or guilt or shame. They didn't do those things from that calm, centered, loving, compassionate space. And if that's the case, then it seems like the most important thing to do, if I'm increasing my observational skills, I'm focusing on my energy system where I carry the earliest warning signs of my tightness, my tension, my upset, my negative emotional state, is to turn the focus inside as soon as possible when I recognize that there's something going on that's less than loving inside of me, and do whatever I may have learned as tools, techniques, tips, etc., to restore peace and calm and expand my observational skills and my field of view, and thereby dramatically increase the probability that I will like what choices I make, that I'll get consequences that I prefer moving forward. And, you know, that might end up being my EFT tapping. It might be breath work. It might be reciting a mantra. It might be doing a yoga pose. It might be pulling out the five-step mental short version of the reality management worksheet and identifying what's the thought I'm using to create an emotion. Identifying the goal that's contained in that thought that's not getting met, and find a way to breathe and soften as I gently repeat to myself, I cancel this thought and this goal, and I ask to be shown the hidden part of my mind that's actually creating this upset. And watch what happens. That is a five-step mental short version, kind of a distillation of the seven-step reality management worksheet. It's available on the mindshiftersacademy.org website, absolutely free. You can go to the educational materials page on that website. And the top link on that website, on that page, the educational materials page, is the short version of the reality management worksheet. And right below it is the written short version of the reality management worksheet. It's got the same wording. It just has some smaller font, and it's got some spacing in there. So if you want to, you can make some notes, some written responses. But to begin to see the benefit of identifying my emotional state and then canceling the thought that's generating it and canceling the goal that's contained in the thought that generates my negative emotion, this is a very powerful, in my experience and many of the people I work with, a very powerful way to start to build my experience with the reality management worksheet and to help restore myself to this space of calm and clarity and expand my field of view to be wide and broad and deep so that whatever choices I need to make are informed by a higher level of information or evidence or data. Because whenever I'm looking through a filter of hostility or fear or any kind of tension or upset, it does not yield good, clean data or a broad field of view. So that's all the time we have. I will remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff that we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. And I'll welcome Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. I appreciate you. And thanks for playing a show for us tomorrow while we're on the road.
No worries. Have a safe trip.
Thank you. Appreciate it. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. And today is Tuesday, July the 9th, 2024. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and then that puts you into queue to talk to us. And we would love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And we'll give Michael just a minute to dial in. Oh, he's with us, so welcome, Michael.
Yes, I'm here. And welcome, everybody. Delighted that you're here to join us for this conversation. It takes us to the next level, hopefully, in this process of not only understanding but applying first century Aramaic forgiveness. And yesterday we had an interesting conversation, And I got a text, so I'm wondering if Sunny is with us, because she sent me a text yesterday after the show. She had quite a bit of processing. And I wonder, Miss Jeannie, is Sunny there?
She is not with us yet.
Oh, okay. Well, you remember that she realized that the burden she was carrying in her shoulders and her neck were related to her need to engage in some forgiveness, which she did. And I got a text from her late yesterday saying that her neck and shoulder pain were gone. So she definitely did a look. It was an interesting conversation. And Miss Susan had a few thoughts, too. It sounds like Susan perhaps was right in there with the conversation. Well, Miss Susan, I wonder if you have any thoughts to share with us today. I was delighted to hear your message to Jeannie when she shared it.
It was ongoing. Poor Jeannie was being barraged with my running commentary. I could have been Sunny. Every bit of it was, sorry I'm a little bit, just came back from a wild first day of a summer program with the refugees, and I'm completely wiped. But I'm here. Yeah, it was wild. The mind shifter you gave her two of them. The first one was so right on. The second one was not as close, but that might mean that it's even better than the first one. The way you work, you can kind of find your way into, you know, if somebody's in denial. But the first one was the stronger and more powerful. I stand up for myself. The easier it is for me to stay connected to love and gather support for my cause.
And as you worked with that one, what did it bring up for you? Did we lose you, Susan? Are you there, Jeannie? Have I gotten lost? Well, I appear to be connected. Well, I'm not sure what has happened. If you can hear me, my phone has gone silent on this end. So I don't know if we've lost you, Susan, or whether I've lost my connection, or just what's happening. If you can hear me, I'm going to disappear for a second and go see. I know someone was coming to the door, a tradesman, to take care of something. So maybe Jeannie has gone to do that, and I'm being heard loud. Let me just check in. I'll be right back.
Michael, you're still on. Her call just dropped. She just came back on.
Oh, cool.
So
okay,
go ahead. The show is still going.
Awesome.
Sorry about that. I don't know what happened
either.
All of a sudden, I was talking to my dead phone. Anyway. So, sorry about that.
So what was moving for you as you worked on that mind shifter?
I felt the power of the words affirming my ability to do just that.
Yes.
I can't explain it. It was as if I got permission. And I in my guts, I got permission. But I loved how she was a lot calmer than I usually am, and I have to hand it to her. That's something I admired very much, but that's beside the point. And there were differences because when she said, I love this guy, and I don't like losing track of people or getting them out of my life. And I was thinking to Jeannie, I said to Jeannie, oops, that's where I'd love to get this person out. I don't feel much love, and I'm kind of sorry about that. But it's been, the pathology there all around. I mean, I keep having to remind myself that here I am again. I've been in this position before. And the interesting thing is, I was looking, I've been reading my old journals. We have, Tim Bingham and I have had someone living with us. Most of the time we've been married, we had a third floor that had a bathroom, and we would invite people to live who had come on difficult times, but we never had one that was homeless. We all know this is the second one, and both of the homeless ones did not work out so well. The first one, we made sure she was out by 6 weeks. It was really quite toxic to us, and so we just found ways of helping her into another place, and that didn't work out for her, but it was out of our hands. With this one, it's a very helpful person, complicated though, but quiet. Tim and I are very quiet. We didn't want to have a lot of company and interaction, social interacting going on all the time. But the others were friends. One young friend of mine got a divorce and had nowhere to stay and stayed with us for about a year before she found herself an apartment. It was a wonderful time. And she was working, but just needed that time. And I could list a bunch of others. And so we were sort of a little looser about our space than we might have been, a little more ready to open it up. And that's, I think it's a good thing in general, but it doesn't always work. So when you asked Sonny, well, what's your responsibility? I mean, you're doing this again. Why is this happening to me again? I'm thinking, I haven't answered that one yet. I just didn't have very good antennae out this time. So,
right.
But I do feel empowered by the mind shifter.
It sounds like it had a visceral effect on you, like it really hit a core energy shift in yourself. I mean, you might remember Joe Bryson, he called into the show. Actually, he shared it a couple of times, but he was at an intensive in Oak Island a few years back, and he had had back pain ongoing. He was sitting on the couch listening to a lecture, a presentation I was doing during the intensive, mm-hmm. and just had that kind of a visceral shift, and that sounds like what happened for you. I mean, he walked out of that session with his back pain gone that had been with him for quite a while.
Well, and
so
I
it sounds like something like
Sonny.
That level shifted for you.
Yeah, and with Sonny, obviously something shifted too. She had had physical, knock on wood, I haven't had physical manifestations of the conflict, but I certainly have emotional ones, and it was like synchronicity in capital letters, because that late afternoon I saw the man who first took Michael in, and that relationship lasted 6 weeks, and the friend made sure that this man didn't stay any longer than that. What happened though is this man bought Michael a van to the tune, used van, $7,000 out. He bought that for him and set him on his way. And the van turned out to be a lemon, and Michael ended up with us. The van wasn't worth much at all, and he just got a very bad deal. But he had been vetted by this friend. I knew Michael was safe, you know, and maybe he had some emotional problems, but it would be safe.
Right.
But where am I going with this? Oh, yeah. I was saying late yesterday afternoon, I was talking to this man. He walks his dogs in the park, and I run into him. And he said he just had a talk with Michael, and Michael has been accepted at a place in Florida. All that's lacking now is paperwork. And as soon as the paperwork is done, and most of it's in, he'll be able to go down there. And I told you my son even agreed to drive him down in my son's van with all his stuff because my son's not working.
Oh,
he would
pretty
like
generous.
To see his sister. Yeah, well, he'd like to see his sister, and he thought it would help Michael out.
I have not heard a peep out of Michael about whether the paperwork has been done. I don't think so, just because it's supposed to arrive in hard copy, and I see the mail before he does most of the time. I can check with him. But Michael told this man he has no intention of going to Florida. And when the time comes, which is what happened to us before, my son had a tiny house he had built, and he was letting Michael have it for a very nothing rent. And on the day we were going to move Michael, Michael had a complete emotional breakdown and said he couldn't do it. He couldn't live in that tiny house. And there were good reasons for it, so we invited him back in the house, and we tried to figure out something else. Now I know this is, I think it's change. I think Michael's terrified of something new. He's comfortable, although he's not productive. He's not performing at all, and that's very damning hard on a creative person. So, but I got word that I am to expect that this is going to happen, and that mind shifter just made me feel, I can do this. I'm going to say, nope, we're taking you down. We're leaving tomorrow, and you're going to be packed, and we'll help you pack, and that's take it or leave it.
Holding the space for you to stand for that.
Thank you, Michael. Yeah,
clearly, I mean, time. You've earned it.
Yeah, right. I feel so, yeah.
Yeah, I think your generosity with him has been more than ample.
Well, you know, you have to, I mean, Jesus said, you will always have the poor with you. And I always thought, that means we've got to bend over backwards. We've got to help. And what does that mean? I mean, that's a question, Michael. You want to say something about that? Can you tell me what it said in Aramaic? Was any different?
I'm not aware of any different take on it from the Aramaic.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, there's a line that we hear every time we get on an airplane, and that is, if the face masks drop, put yours on first.
Yeah.
And
right.
Certainly within the means that we have to support someone, support is definitely appropriate. And going to the point of being taken advantage of, I think, is a mistake in the opposite direction.
Yeah.
And you've certainly gone well, well overboard for him. So holding the space at his new place in Florida serves him well.
I hope so. And my daughter's down there. She said, look, Mom, I'm too busy to spend a lot of time, but I am in close touch with this particular building and these people. They know me and I know them, and I can make sure they do right by him, and I'll watch out for him down here. He's got a real support system built right in at both ends.
That's pretty powerful.
It is. He has no arguments whatsoever.
And I'll hold the fantasy that on the way back, Jonathan will make a stop in Bristol, Virginia.
Oh, wouldn't that be fabulous?
Maybe do a still point session or something.
That would be fabulous. And, I've told you that Luke said he wants to work with you. He's just not in a position yet because he's still in college and he's working a job and all that stuff. And
right,
he is still
right.
doing this terrible power person thing. He broke up with the girl. She left him. It was a healthy thing. He knew it was. He was in terrible pain. They're back together again. So this is happening over and over and over again. And he really could use your help, but I'll let you know when the time is right. That's a wonderful offer, a nice resource to know. Jonathan, I'm not so sure he'd be willing to stop and do that. He's a different can of worms. Wonderful
I understand.
Can of worms, but yeah. So I just have to say that lying here on the couch, doing my breathing. You kept asking, are you breathing? And I'm going, puff, 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 puff. And Jeannie was nice enough afterwards to even text me and say, do you need Michael to call you? I mean, talk about support. I felt on top of the world. I felt as if you just popped a latch and suddenly came out. And thank Sunny, whenever you talk to her, she's got to be the best person alive. I mean, it was great.
We'll pass that along.
Yeah.
All right. Well, any other thoughts for you?
Oh, of course. Who's on the line? Anybody pressing one?
Just you.
Is Sunny there for me? Are you sure?
No, not yet.
Sunny
nope.
is here, and I can put both of you on.
Oh, she is. Pardon me. Okay, let's go for it.
Okay.
Sunny?
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Isn't it beautiful? We bless each other.
Yeah, Sunny, I can't thank you enough. Your work was my work, ran totally parallel until the point where you said, he's like an uncle to us. And I thought, nope, not here. Our guy is not an uncle to us. And the second was you said, I don't like to let people go out of my life. And I'm thinking, generally, that's true for me. But in this case, I'd like the person out, permanently out. So, but your work was fantastic and helpful, and I was breathing right along with you.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you, thank you. I appreciate that. And you're welcome. And that's what this is about, is setting us all free of all of the unnecessary stuff, right?
Yeah. So
and I shared,
I'm interested.
Susan.
What? What, Mike?
I was just going to say that I had shared, pardon me, Sunny, that with Susan, that your neck, you texted me that your neck and your shoulder pain were gone. So congratulations.
Yeah,
nice work.
Neck, shoulder, and hip, as far as that in the mind.
Oh, the hip
was
shifted
very,
as well?
Yeah, oh, yes. And
awesome.
Yeah, that standing up. And interesting to look at my daughter's x-rays and my own. She'll be 25, 24th of July. It is definitely a genetic type thing, but, you know, I supersede all that because it's whatever this is it's gone. And I haven't even spoke to my daughter. The issue that triggered me was, in fact, my daughter's phone was not on. They've reduced her work schedule down to 3 days a week, which is why she had the need in the winter to rent out rooms. It became perfect for this person, for him, and far more accommodating for his physical needs, straight out of spine surgery. And she needed him. He needed her. We care for him. His family was either unable or unwilling. And he has become like family to us. So, I made it clear to him that, you know, unlike what he had the luxury of experiencing here, this was in fact going to be very temporary for him, and that he would have to assert, well, he's back to work, been back to work a few months, 3 days a week, and he now has his retirement benefits to count on, so he's not hard-pressed financially. The only reasons are the ones that he creates as to why he has never done anything differently. And as I said, this time regulatory speech with you, Michael, served me very well, and I cannot thank you enough because I had texted him before I even thought I was going to reach out to you with the work. I thought I had a good handle on it, and then I realized that feeling of impasse that we mentioned, and I had texted him, Michael, and I said, you know, I said it to him as well. Didn't hear it until I heard you. You heard me and brought it to my attention. I said, I'm not even pissed, Larry. I'm done. My words to him was, I'm done. And I didn't feel that until after I set forth to do the work because I, in fact, am done. And I'm on the edge of tears. I had an opportunity to call him after settling
in.
Yeah. After settling in, it's like, you know that we cherish you. We care very much for you. You're like family to us. I will help in any way that I can support you. If you need anything, let us know. It's just come to the point of where the rental options are no longer available with me in mind. It's just that day has come. It's come to an end. And he full circle again. Well, I guess I could just, I don't know, I guess I could just live in my car. That whole guilt trip thing that we had spoke of. And I said, well, you know, if you feel that's necessary, I said, but if it's really, you know, comes to that, you can always go to the Christian Center. You can stay there, and maybe there's some new doors open. Maybe you're needed there. And this time, and then Brent.
Good response.
Made the observation. He got mad, and he hung up. Now, that is a first, because I have been very assertive with him many times. And we're like brother and sister. We have our little quabbles or whatever, just, you know, non-regulatory communication with people. And this is the first time he ever felt it, got mad, and hung up. And that's, Brent made the observation. He said, yeah, well, this time he felt it and you don't. You cleared yours, now it is his. And I said, exactly. So...
And notice, and then, you can predict when you stop fulfilling his goal, his stress went up. And when his stress went up, he did what his power person did to him. That's his healing opportunity, getting angry and leaving. You can, it's just night follows day. You can rely on that. So if the communication is there, you might invite him to look at how it felt when his power person abandoned him, hung up, and got angry. And that might open the space for another level of his healing as well.
Yes, and I didn't obviously have that opportunity as of yet. But in right. that course of conversation, whether it was truly my place or I know that he heard me, he's been around me 8 years, he understands, you know, how I roll and most of the concepts thereof. I said, you know, this is really, like I said, this is not an up, you know, conversation of anything other than what you make of it. I said, but I want to offer you the observations that I've made for you. I said, I met you shortly after your divorce of 25 years, which was very amicable, but very unusual circumstances. And I said, however, your last three roommates, counting now he's my daughters, are with women. And I said, well, I'm very sorry for what Kathy did to you. There's women are not responsible for supporting you. And in the context of your feeling...
And you're sorry
for
that because?
Well, you know, the non-regulatory here, I said, so... In the,
well, there's no
in
such
the,
thing as non-regulatory. Hold on a second. Let's put the cards on the table here. I noticed that when you were talking about this time, the regulatory speech was accurate. Like, it was an exception. Here's what my offering is on that thought. Regulatory speech, your speech system is infallible. It will always inform you as to what's going on in your unconscious if you listen to it. There's no such thing as non-regulatory.
Okay.
So you might just want to put that in the hopper. And
okay. All right.
Recognize.
I'm writing. I had to use a carpenter's pencil. I'm in the garage and apparently didn't bring my pencil. Construction pencil here. Okay. All right.
That was it. Just, there's no such thing as non-regulatory. Regulatory speech will always, 1,000% of the time, tell you when you pay attention to it, when you say things that you say, oh, I didn't mean that, that your unconscious meant that. And that's just the way it is. That's the way the whole speech system works.
Right. And I catch those little keywords like should and sorry and that one did come out. Yes, I know you did.
So what does sorry mean? Here, let me offer what my take, my offering over the years of working with people, when I hear them apologizing for something that they have nothing to do with. They live in guilt and fear of blame, and they take the blame before somebody else lays it on them. And I'd invite you to make that your next piece of work, that you clean this thing up, that you're responsible. And this is something that's been done to a lot of women. And there are two sides to that equation. When I say I don't want to be responsible for my life, somebody else will come along and jump in and take responsibility. But, you know, I think there are many women who just automatically take this I'm sorry approach. And it's like, what do you have to be sorry for? I can, offer, if I have empathy for what you're suffering, I have empathy, I'll hold the space for your healing. But to say I'm sorry is an indicator that some part of your mind is holding blame for you, for what, in this case, your words were, she did to him.
Right, and this would be...
And it's not your responsibility.
I see the interconnectedness of it maybe being another piece there of that sense of responsibility for other people's la, 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 and then everything we touched on yesterday. So thank you. That is the ongoing, maybe the unfinished sense. I mean, I felt very
complete in
the work yesterday.
Yeah.
But
next piece
exactly.
of the work.
More to it. Thank you.
And your worksheets I would offer would be on over-responsibility, on guilt or other people's circumstances, on perhaps working with how did it feel? And this is just a guess. I may be totally all wet here, but how did it feel when your power person blamed you for what was going on in their lives?
Yeah, exactly.
So that would be the next level.
Yeah, well,
and then
when with the conversation. Oh, go ahead.
Well, no, you go ahead.
I was just in that little piece with him. I said, and the observation being that cancer, resentment causes cancer, and this whole female, on running for you, leaning on women to be supported back for the support you had given a 25-year marriage. And then your cancer resentment shows up in the form of tumors on your spinal cord in terms of being supported. And I said, I think it's just really time that you heal through this stuff. And I'll help you get there. Am I here for you? And I know you understand this conversation. And he's like, well, fine, I'll just boom. He was like, I'll leave. I said, well, you're 65. She's a 24-year-old girl. And her company, her friends, feel like she lives with her father. And it's just not a good fit. It's simply not a good fit. It was temporary. You're through that, and it's time to move on. And I don't know what that's going to look like for you, but that day has come.
Yeah.
Because we've been working on this conversation for 3 months. There's another excuse, Yeah. Go
okay,
ahead.
Let's put a hold on it. Stop story. Hold.
Yeah, and I know.
Breaks. Stop. Full stop.
Uh-huh.
Remember yesterday we talked about how when a reality comes up, that clearly is something that's happening inside of me. When I live in denial and dissociation, I move away from that circumstance, having a conversation about them.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm stepping into responsibility and healing, I move away from that conversation or that situation, having a conversation about me. Now, my offering is, you just uncovered with that little piece of speech and the acknowledgement of your power person blaming you, a mega, major piece of work around over-responsibility, apologizing for something you have nothing to do with, or actually it's not apologizing, it's being sorry. And notice I'm inviting you to observe what your mind did. This is called automatic pilot. This is the automatic decision system. Notice that you just touched into a really, it might even be the biggest piece of work of your life, and you went and carried on a conversation about him. And I invite you to notice that, you know, that's a way, if that fits, and I just propose to ask you to take a look at it, and that's just a way to avoid what I just uncovered in myself. Now, my offering would be, with what you uncovered, that your healing process would lead you to a conversation about, yeah, this, when I was a kid, yeah, when, blame, yeah, gee, they still are, or no, they're not in my life, they're gone, whatever, and to step into processing what you just uncovered. But just notice how your automatic decision system kicked into a conversation about something totally and completely different than what you just uncovered for yourself.
I guess I'm not understanding where we went. I was just finishing what I was able to offer and bring. There was no conflict in the conversation with him, and just it was a healing experience for the both of us. And that's where I told him, I said, I actually need to thank you, because while I was able to, you know, learn a lot about myself in this experience in the totality, this is what I would like to offer you, because this is really not a bad thing. And you can do it. You can get out on your own. These are the observations. And just to let you know that these are the observations. And I guess maybe, you know, yeah. I mean, I do constant work on myself making these observations. And it's like a lot of, like, the Louise Hay little quick reference book is very nice. It's like, okay, I feel this here, and then search for the why. You know, where'd it come from? How come? You know, I like your, what color is it? What shape is it? What temperature? You know, that type of thing. That's very nice, Michael. I like that. So
I'm going to take one more shot. I'm going to put one more effort into inviting you to back up.
All right. I don't maybe understand which part of the conversation you're referring to, but go ahead.
Well, let's back up. You spoke about having said you were sorry for what his wife did to him.
Yes.
And I invited you to look at why you would be apologizing for something that you had nothing to do with.
Yes, and said that was good.
And my offering was, that's a major piece of work. And
yes.
Then we went to, in conjunction with that, how that very likely is a power person dynamic, and you acknowledged it when I asked how it felt when your power person blamed you. So what I'm working to point out to you is we opened a major issue for you that I would offer is perhaps one of the core issues of your life. Does that make sense?
It does, and I just heard it.
Okay.
Well,
what I'm going to invite you to do is to go back and listen to this again when the show's over, because it's pretty blatant. And then as I asked you about how it felt when your power person blamed you and acknowledged, you gave a laugh and acknowledged, yeah, that was like the story of my relationship with him. But then you went on like nothing had been opened, nothing had been said, and you started to talk about the conversation with him again. A conversation that I think you'd already, my offering would be, I'd already heard it. I think it had been completed. So what I'm inviting you to look at is the possibility that that might be an habitual way that your mind covers up major issues when they open for you. And if that's accurate and you can catch your mind at it, wow, you're going to take a giant leap in your work. That's all.
Well, maybe I'll need to go back and do some like the one power person, as I said, I had multiple parentage. One, the foster mother who actually had custody of me, used to tell me primarily and her other children while she was doing her thing and having her personal meltdowns and so on, blaming us for what was going on inside of her, that we were going to cause her to have a heart attack. And I no longer lived with her. I left home at 14 and was happened to be that day with my maternal aunt and got the phone call. And I remember my aunt turning to me and telling me that Barb had had a heart attack. And the rush, I don't think I went to school that day. I think I stayed home of, oh, wow, this is, how am I not? And I remember, but I'm not even there. How did I make that happen? So, yeah, I might go in and do some more work around that, Michael, because I lived with that chirp in my ear and constantly that would be, you know, and then when that day came, it was like, but I'm not even there. But I still felt it. So thank you. I've got this written down.
Remember that there are actualities. You know, what I hear you describing is there was an actuality that happened. Your stepmother had a heart attack. Well, you weren't there, and you were willing to take blame for it. And what happens in that situation, and this is why we need to catch the mind at its game, this is why breathing is such an important thing to enlist, Rukka Dukkha, to enlist that elemental force that brings us healing. It's because those programs, those thoughts play out, and, you know, there's a fact, there's an event that happened. Barb had a heart attack. You weren't there. And your mind, because of the thoughts you held in it, substituted the idea that you were to blame for something that happened and you weren't even there. That's reality. That's perception taking the place of the actual world of the Creator, the actuality of what happens. And so I'm going to make a suggestion that if you ever even think of speaking the words, I'm sorry again, you stop mid-sentence and clean up your mind. And if there's a circumstance, and circumstances happen where we do things that are off base, we make mistakes, we blow things, and we are responsible for them, and it's perfectly appropriate to apologize for that. Certainly, your mother being somewhere else and she's a heart attack, nothing for you to apologize for or even think, how could I possibly be responsible, except the thought disorder that's up for being forgiven now that it's surfaced. But we have an apology tool for the circumstances where, gee, I did make a mistake. I did do something inappropriate, and it is my responsibility, and that is to simply acknowledge, gee, I was off base with what I did, and I apologize for what I did, and then in the future, what I'm going to do, and you offer a replacement behavior that's going to bring healing to that circumstance. And that way, you know, when people say, I'm sorry, in essence, I'm sorry for this. So now you've got the person who's being told, you know, that you're sorry. You've got their creative mind joined with your creative mind on what you're sorry about, and the tendency is going to be to create more of it. The apology tool that we've developed goes in the opposite direction, and it speaks of responsibility for what I did and what my correction is going to be. So now I have the person that I'm offering the apology to, I have their mind focused on the correction and my mind focused on the correction. I'm going to have a whole lot better chance of doing the correction rather than playing out of the old pattern.
Right.
But I suggest it's a really serious piece of work to undo this power person message that you could possibly be to blame for things like this gentleman's interaction with his former wife.
Yes, and I very much appreciate that observation, because if there's anything lingering that I thought I'd been through, got through, thank you, thank you.
Re-listen to this show with pen in hand and catch every subtle nuance of your own regulatory speech, and letting go of any part of your mind that wants to make this piece of regulatory speech valid and this one's not, because regulatory speech is infallible. It will always tell you what's going on in your unconscious.
Yes. And there's so much of that, too, right now, of being very consciously aware of not only our regulatory speech, but the context or the actual structure of some of the words that we use that are, it's like you, like, what do you refer to as the automatic pilot, or it's been so part, as much a part of our culture that they, you know, we're trained for it, and it's a lot to be brought to our awareness about our words and then
sure.
the certain words, how we use them. Exactly. Exactly. So, yeah, I was able to, go ahead.
No, you got another thought to finish in that topic. Go ahead.
Well, I went on in this piece of work, Michael, and I was speaking with one of my daughter's friends. And I was explaining this to her, and she's a brilliant young lady. She's 38 years old. And I said, you get this spiritually, so on. And she said, yeah, that's why I love hanging out with you. I'm like, okay, well, I said, you know, I was looking at this whole dynamic and surrounding Larry, and she's like, I've never understood, she said, I have never understood why Markayla, my daughter, doesn't just simply tell him. And I said, well, this is the beautiful part of what happened today, Renee, is that it was brought to my attention as to why that might be and how this has gone on. It's been in our generations. And I said, hopefully, we've done the necessary work to getting that frequency and that dynamic changed for she and I both. And she said, I see that. I get that. I so get that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And chances are, probably 99 out of 100, that Markayla's power person, mom, had many moments of unconsciousness where Markayla was to blame for what was going on for mom. And so the conversation we've just had about that.
Yeah, probably very aware, more so than you might imagine, that that would never be a truth for her. That, and I brought her, you know.
Well,
yeah. So, but this idea, too, because I do get where, you know, she said that, you know, like Renee said, that makes sense because, well, he's sick. Larry has cancer. I said, Larry can have cancer for a long time, but it's not our responsibility. You know, and that's where, she, you know, Mark, my daughter would be manipulated,
Notice we've just shifted topics again. I'm inviting you to notice how your mind works.
I
invited you to take a look at, take a breath, take a breath, take a breath, stop, take a breath, like big breath. So
yeah.
I'm going to offer once again an observation that you might want to make about how your mind works.
Uh-huh.
You shared with me how your power person made it really clear that it was regularly your fault for what was going on in her life.
Right.
And my offering would be, or what I asked you to look at, was, and I would put the odds at this being true. Now, I'm totally willing to say, and I might be totally and completely out in left field, but I would say the odds are about 99.9999% that as your mother unconsciously made you to blame for what was going on in her life, it was a good old family feeling. The pattern still goes on. Notice you, up until just a few minutes ago, were still apologizing for things you had nothing to do with. I would say the odds that mom unconsciously played that dynamic out with Markela are pretty high. And so I just invite you to look. And as I offered that conversation, watch what your mind did. It went back into a conversation about him and cancer. And I'm just inviting you to observe how your mind tricks you into, gee, you uncover something, or you get a chance to uncover something. And this is a typical thing. I mean, we've all done this one. But catching your mind at it is, it can be tricky.
Yes,
and so you might just want to take a look at that.
I appreciate your observation very, very, very much. And,
cool. Awesome.
Yes. We will in
awesome.
Fact leave it at that. But I appreciate you very much, Michael. And yeah, so there's lots of support for my daughter in and around us with like-minded others. And cannot thank you enough, really. And I like that we have, you know, that I think that might have been where I said I really didn't know how I still felt. And I felt pretty complete in it. And still process the energies late into the night. And maybe this is some of the residual on the, you know, even the automatic pilot concept of the word sorry or the concept of sorry. And, yeah, just ever still that trained life thing of ever feeling responsible for hurting someone or what have you, or hurting their feelings, is that's a huge dynamic. I would think it is for me anyway, of being very consciously aware. Okay, and if it hurts,
so it
them,
might be a
money.
Good conversation to have. A good conversation to open with Markela, and there's probably another big opening for both of you to do a monumental piece of healing work.
Yes, her rearage was. You know, her dad was a huge influence in multiple stepmothers and that type of thing, too. So, yeah, that's a thing. And I definitely...
So many opportunities.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So,
cool.
I appreciate you very, very much, Michael.
All right. Delighted. And
beautiful.
Earlier
so
in the conversation... Yeah,
so happy
cool.
for Susan. Yes.
So earlier in the conversation, there was a point where you were talking about the shift that occurred physiologically, and I had the strong inclination, because I've just done some writing as part of the Quantum Still Point on Rukha Dukkha and the power of the breath and the influence of breath, and how if we utilize that elemental force, if we invite it into activity, how it can shift things like what was going on in your neck and your shoulder and your hip. And can do it in a fraction of a second. And so just for everyone who's listening, I want to redefine, I've kind of expanded in the context of the Quantum Still Point, because I'm looking to get people to understand at depth the energy dynamics that go on inside of each one of us. But this is a piece from the Quantum Still Point on Rukha. So the breath, known in the ancient Aramaic language as Rukha Dukkha, when we become still enough to breathe consciously and listen, makes available the intuitive guidance system that resides within. This knowing has always been with you and is 100% trustworthy. Rukha is literally defined as a feminine elemental force that undoes the effects of your errors, the past, and teaches you the truth. It requires being still and listening. In our modern computer world, we might think of this force as a super processor that consistently brings truth to mind and affects by reaching through all time, space, and generations, the undoing of every aspect, every result, every inclination, and every errant inclination or behavior. The net result of Ruka to Kutch is being invited into action, and you have to invite it because your free will never be violated. When you remember that the word sin in Aramaic is simply an archery term that means off the mark, is the undoing, the liberation from all sin and its effects. This is a particularly important principle to understand for those laboring under the greatest quote-unquote sin of all, generational fear. So just to make the point that, you know, when you realize that the Harvard research that we've talked about, where they've shown that in a time frame where 10,000 measurable units of electrical activity are happening in the system, and in that same time frame, all we can be conscious of is 9 bits, that when you think about, if you're looking at a generational pattern, and you've got, you know, metaphorically, we could say a 9-bit processor, how could we ever process that much data? How could we ever bring correction to that? And fortunately, Yeshua 2000 year informed us that there was this superprocessor, this feminine elemental force that brings truth to mind. And it can literally reach through all space, all time, all generations, all effects, all causes, when I give permission for it to enter and make the change. We're not stuck doing these monumental works on our own, which, if we were on our own, would be impossible. We're not. Of Course in Miracles says it beautifully. You are not asked to do the impossible here. All you're asked is for a little willingness and an invitation, and to do your part in the forgiveness process. And your part, if we quote from the Course, and it's exactly the same as the ancient Aramaic, what the Course says is, definition of forgiveness, let go all the things you think you want. Your trifling treasure put away, and leave a clean and open space within your mind for healing to come. None of us is left on our own. However, because we have free will, I can say no to that power, and I can be hanging out there on my own. Seemingly hung out to dry by the Creator. But it's only our denial of the entryway of that feminine elemental force that will do those things for us. And you remember that, you know, going back again to the idea of sin being an energy that's off the mark. The sins of the fathers, of course, that's not a sexist remark, parents, mother and father, will be passed, yea, unto 3 and 4 generations, says the Creator. And then perhaps the most important part of that passage, after the comma, 3 and 4 generations, says, yea, of those who hate me. Now that's a Greek misinterpretation of that passage. The Aramaic word there that's been translated as hate is not as in a love-hate relationship, but those who are separated. The Creator is saying, those who are separated from the active presence of my love can't process through these generational patterns. And that means that the only advisor we have for behavior is, what have our generations done? You know, what kind of emotional turmoil, what kind of stuff is in carbon-based memory that comes up to prompt us into behavior? And if we have that veil closed and we don't have access to the active presence of love, then the only advisor we've got is our past, carbon-based memory, generational patterns, the good old family feeling. And to look there can be an absolutely monumental piece of work. Because for most of us, it's gone on for so long. That melody line from that song comes up into mind when I think about that. How long has this been going on? Forever. And I'll say that, you know, over the last 50 years of working with people one-on-one, it's rare. I can count on one hand how many people over the years, when they're introduced to this work or anything that truly resembles it, I can count on one hand how many people can remember their parentage doing anything like this work. 99.999% of people are the early adopters of this work. Nobody in their bloodline had a clue or had ever done any internal healing work. And so it is a monumental shift of mind to take on. And to me, it's such an important reminder that we have literally this feminine elemental force in us that knows how to handle it all. And the only thing that will restrict the ability for those energetic patterns to be handled is that we have some use for them. We hold the beliefs that the family system had. Well, if anybody ever attacks me, I have to have this rage to be able to protect myself. Well, you can say you want to get rid of your rage, but if you think you've got to hold on to it for a reason, you have not given permission for it to be undone, and it will not be undone because you have free will, and that will, free will never be violated. So this superprocessor consistently brings truth to mind and can reach through all time, all space, all generations, undoing every aspect, every result, every implication of any errant inclination or behavior. And so joining you in breathing and recognizing that that power is within you, and the way you invite it to go to work is to breathe. Yes, the mental assent, the agreement for it is powerful, and the activity of it comes when you choose in the middle of your muddle, rather than being stuck in your story, to actually breathe. So breathing with each and every one of you, appreciation for lending your energy to this understanding, and holding the space for the work that we do here. It's monumental, and our appreciation is deep. And we hold the space that you're going to have the best year yet of your eternal life. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles. Discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com. Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles. Discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at tanger.com.